thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to the seventh episode of our season on the question of God. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am honored to be your host. One of the standards that movie critics use in their evaluations of films is the criterion of consistency or coherence. Sometimes movies are stricken with plot holes, and a good movie critic is adept at finding these plot holes and pointing them out. A plot hole is a gap or inconsistency in a storyline that conflicts with or contradicts the flow of logic established by the story's plot. Outside of professional film critics, some people are really good at spotting plot holes in movies. My wife Courtney is certainly one of them. Like a professional film critic, those of us who have been formally trained in logic, and those of us who have educational backgrounds in philosophy and theology, have a knack for spotting plot holes in worldviews and ideologies. In some ways, I've been programmed in a very robotic way to find holes in arguments, including in my own. Atheism, to me, has a lot of plot holes. This is why, oftentimes, atheistic worldviews are quite underdeveloped. I'm not the only person who thinks this. Theists are not the only people who think this. Many agnostics, atheists, and non-theists would admit this as well. A good example comes from the creator of the hit Amazon series, The Boys. Eric Kripke, alongside Seth Rogen, is the producer of the show. Here is a fascinating quote from Kripke, presumably a non-theist, that came from an interview at a recent Comic-Con event. The interview was published online in August of 2019. Kripke's comments are in response to backlash that he had received for various anti-religious and anti-Christian sentiments in his show. Quote, "I'm catching a lot of shit because we're taking some shots at Christianity, and similar to what Supernatural did, taking some shots at angels and God. And I'm like, I don't take shots at religion. Religion is great. You believe in a higher power, and you have an organized universal view. That's terrific. I have no problem with religion. I have a problem with organized religion." End quote. Earlier on in the interview, attempting to downplay the inherent nihilism that runs through the show, Kripke, who also produced the series Supernatural, said this, quote, "The theme of Supernatural and the theme of The Boys is the thing that I most value, which is family and loyalty to your friends and pulling together in tough situations and showing your humanity and vulnerability and just sticking together. That's the closest thing I've got to a worldview." End quote. I applaud Kripke for his honesty and for his courage to admit this. At the same time, in his show The Boys, Kripke falls into the same trappings that have become so common today in contemporary discourse. The tendency to critique the worldviews of others without any semblance of self-critique, without any self-awareness. The Boys has the courage to criticize organized religion and Christianity. But does it have the courage to criticize atheism and nihilism? I'm not sure, because I actually stopped watching midway through the second season. The heavy fog of nihilism, the dark cloud of futility, meaninglessness, pointlessness, hopelessness, and godlessness just became too thick, too overwhelming, and too toxic for me to breathe. I've called out the moral degradation of the popular ethic of loyalty to friends and family, what I call the perversion of loyalty, or even blind loyalty, in a previous episode. Suffice it to say, basing a worldview and basing morality on one's loyalty to friends and family is dubious at best. Didn't the Nazis do this? Don't white nationalists do this? These are the kinds of inconsistencies that I'm talking about. One's loyalty should not be primarily to friends and family members. As valuable and precious as friends and family members are. But to what is true, what is noble, what is right, what is pure, what is lovely, what is admirable, and what is good. But as I stated in the third episode of this season, nihilism robs life of truth, values, and goodness, relegating the human experience to an open-world video game and a moral playground. Before I bring us back to more worldview engagement, I want to quickly mention something about Seth Rogen, Kripke's sidekick on The Boys. Rogen has a history of anti-religious bigotry, a thread that you can trace throughout much of his work. It seems like almost everything the man touches is marred with prejudice against traditional forms of religion, specifically against Christianity. Another show that Rogen produced called Preacher serves as a great example. There's a scene in one of the episodes of that series that contains the most blasphemous and blatantly sacrilegious thing that I've ever seen with my own eyes. I bring this up because it helps to elucidate my point concerning consistency and coherence. See, in our culture today, it has become acceptable, even trendy and hip, to ridicule and insult and make fun of and hate on Christians, utilizing bad criticism as opposed to good criticism, an uncivil discourse as opposed to civil discourse. We live in a society where it's evil to say anything negative about almost any demographic in our world, except for practicing Christians. Yet often this hypersensitive, easily offended viewpoint comes from people who have no basis for believing that evil is a real thing, is an objective thing. The same people who want to cancel anything and everything that can be taken offensively, the same people who constantly speak out publicly against prejudice, bigotry, and discrimination are the same people who take every opportunity that they can to rail on Christians and their beliefs. And part of the reason why so many people are blind to the glaring inconsistency and hypocrisy here is because this is precisely what much of our media and entertainment encourages. And we accept it because we are largely a simple-minded society. But all that to say that consistency is important, coherence is important, And hypocrisy is a vice that should be discouraged, not encouraged. Today, we are continuing our process of worldview engagement, juxtaposing and evaluating the two worldviews in question, atheism and theism, on the basis of four subjective principles of selection or standards of evaluation. Number one, philosophical causation. Number two, coherence and consistency. Number three, the concept of the miraculous. And number four, the notion of faith. The categories that I'm using in order to compare and contrast and rationally evaluate these two worldviews are as follows: cosmology, the natural processes, development, and conditions of the universe; anthropology, morality and ethics; the nature of truth; the problem of evil; and the problem of beauty. My assessment in this episode will be more brief and simple. It was important for me in the previous episode to be much more rigid and mechanical, and to explicitly map out my arguments in a very formulaic manner. That way, you understand what I'm doing, how I'm thinking, and how I'm working through these concepts. Now that I've done the heavy lifting, so to speak, today's evaluation will be much lighter in that regard. Let's pick up our assessment where we left off, with the category of anthropology, beginning with human rationality. Here is our terse propositional statement: a given effect cannot be qualitatively or substantively greater than its cause. Another way of saying this is that a given effect needs a sufficient cause. A cause that shares the same essential qualities and substances with the corresponding effect. We can call this the principle of philosophical causation, or we can call it Cartesian causation, since it is crucial to Descartes' ontological argument for the existence of God, an argument that I don't personally find to be very convincing. In fact, I don't find Anselm's ontological argument to be very persuasive either. At any rate, I believe that rationality is qualitatively and substantively greater than non-rationality, that the former is radically different in nature and essence than the latter, and far greater. I make this argument in much greater detail on my two-part podcast entitled Humans and Animals. In that two-part podcast, I claim that humans are qualitatively and substantively different from and greater than animals, in part because of the transcendental nature of human rationality. Once again, I think that those who don't believe in God believe in a miracle here, that rationality can come from a non-rational process, that mind can come from matter, which appears to violate philosophical causation. Without a sufficient cause for the effect of human rationality, this seems to surmount to a kind of spontaneous generation, a kind of miracle. And the effect of miracles doesn't naturally flow from the cause of atheism. Human rationality is a supernatural, metaphysical, transcendental reality. It cannot be reduced to a non-rational process and mindless atoms and cells. It also can't be reduced to the central nervous system and the human brain, as complex as the human brain is, since, as Alvin Plantinga, distinguished professor at Notre Dame, and John Lennox, distinguished professor at the University of Oxford, have noted, human rationality can't be explained by, does not compute with, does not cohere with naturalistic and materialistic and purely adaptive electrochemical events in the brain. The quote, chattering of soulless synapses, as Lennox puts it. This brings me to the specific issue of upward development from the non-rational to the rational. I think that the movement from a single-celled organism to a salamander is a change of degree, not a qualitative or substantive change. It doesn't involve a change in essence. The salamander is reducible to the unicellular organism. The key for me is that the development here is a physical and biological development. So the progression from a single-celled organism to the salamander involves a change in degree from one living thing to a more complex living thing. Even though one has a central nervous system and one doesn't, both share the same essence, a non-rational, animate, or living essence. But the change from a non-rational thing to a rational thing involves a qualitative change in essence. The rational thing is not reducible to the non-rational thing, because the rational thing is qualitatively and substantively greater and different. This is the problem with atomism. I don't think you can reduce the human mind to an atom. The chimpanzee and the human are very similar physically, biologically, and chemically. But humans are qualitatively greater and different from chimps, due in part to the possession of rational minds. It might be possible to speak about the development of the human mind in evolutionary history. But in my understanding, the development couldn't be the product of a natural internal capacity, intrinsic or inherent, within non-rational matter itself, but a potentiality or capacity intentionally embedded within nature from without by a transcendent mind, by a rational spirit, by the Spirit of God, who works both from without and from within in order to drive the evolutionary process to the production of incredible and astonishing, creative and novel results. This would allow mind to develop within evolutionary history without violating philosophical laws of causation, since mind would come from mind, instead of mind coming from the absence of mind. Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz's theory of monadology can possibly serve as a helpful example of this line of thinking. Let's move on to the category of human freedom. Here's our propositional statement. Libertarian freedom cannot come from either an irrational indeterminate or a non-rational determinate process. Libertarian freedom is the freedom to choose contrary to one's nature, predispositions, instincts, and desires. Like deciding not to curse out that person who just cut you off on the road, or choosing to eat vegetables instead of that slice of cake for lunch. Some might call this true freedom, or real freedom. I believe that libertarian freedom is a self-evident truth, one that we know tacitly from our very human experience. We know free will to be a real thing because we experience it directly every day in our existential existence. libertarian freedom and rationality go hand in hand. Because we are rational beings, we have the ability to act rationally, if we so choose. Our freedom allows us to incorporate our rationality in the decision-making process, enabling us to make reasonable choices and thoughtful selections between alternatives. How can libertarian freedom and rational freedom spawn from chemical or biological determinacy, or arbitrary and random quantum indeterminacy? We see the same violations of causation and coherence here. We see the same plot holes, if you will. This is yet another miracle that the one who doesn't believe in God affirms. That freedom comes from the absence of freedom. That volition comes from non-volition. That will comes from that which is unwilling. I believe that human beings are transcendental beings, the fusion of spirit and matter, soul and cells. And I believe that these qualities of the human person, rationality and freedom, are transcendental qualities and are non-reducible. Let me read a quote from John Lennox on this point. Quote, "A chimp may share 98% of its DNA with ourselves, but it's not 98% human. It's not human at all. It is a chimp. And does the fact that we have genes in common with a mouse or a banana say anything about human nature? Some claim that genes will tell us what we really are. The idea is absurd." End quote. The category of morality and ethics is a category that I've already dealt with in this season, so I'm just going to succinctly deal with it in this context. Here's our propositional statement. Objective morality cannot come from a subjective non-moral or amoral process. I believe that objective morality is real, and morality and ethics can only be objective if they're grounded in God. The only possible objective standard by which to measure what is right and wrong, good and evil. For if they are not grounded in God, they are either purely subjective and relative to the conditions of time and space, or they are metaphysical ideals and universals in the Platonic sense that lack any real sense of authority because they are merely impersonal. I believe that atheism has a huge moral problem. This leads to a lot of inconsistency, a lot of plot holes in atheistic thinking, which I alluded to in my illustration for this episode. I would argue that unless one is a psychopath, and thus unless one has something seriously wrong with them, most people have a natural moral sense or an innate moral compass. And most people have a desire to act upon this sense/compass in order to do good and be good. But I would ask you this question. In a naturalistic or materialistic landscape, in a cruel and uncaring evolutionary environment predicated upon the survival of the fittest, in a universe dominated by the so-called selfish gene, in a dog-eat-dog world, where does such a sense and such a desire come from? Is not morality transcendental and non-reducible? Does real morality, true morality, not defy, belie pure adaptation and natural selection. The nature of truth is another category that I've already dealt with in this season. Here's our terse propositional statement. Objective or absolute truth cannot come from the subjective conditions and processes of space and time. An eternal God is the only possible objective authority by which to measure what is absolutely and universally true and false in all times and all places, and for all times and for all places. The human being is not omnipresent and eternal like God is. Human thought, by definition, is finite, fallible, subjective, relative, and subject to and limited by the conditions of space and time. Again, objective truth cannot come from subjective human experience and the relative conditions of space and time. I believe that objective and absolute truth is real. And truth can only be truly objective and absolute if it's grounded in God. For if it is not grounded in God, it is either subjective and relative to the conditions of time and space, at least as we experience these conditions in the knowable world, or it is an ideal and universal in the Platonic sense that lacks any real sense of authority because it is merely impersonal. I believe that atheism has a huge truth problem. This leads to inconsistency, to plot holes, in atheistic thinking, which Alvin Plantinga and John Lennox both point out. My final categories for engagement are the problem of evil and the problem of beauty. The problem of pain and suffering has been referred to as the rock of atheism, and for good reason. It is my belief that most atheists deny God's existence largely on the basis of this shared human problem, though I do think that that is beginning to change. With that said, I don't have the time nor the space to sufficiently deal with this issue here. The problem of evil is such a big topic in and of itself. Because of this, I'll do an entire season on this issue at a future date. I knew this would be the case going into the season, but I at least wanted to make mention of the problem of evil since its absence from a season on the question of God would be rather odd. I will say this. I personally have never felt that the problem of evil is a real problem for God's existence. It's a real problem for people, no doubt. But I don't think it's a real problem for the existence of God. I've never understood it as a persuasive or convincing defeater to theism. That doesn't mean that I don't take it seriously. And it certainly doesn't mean that I can't empathize with those who do view it as a defeater. But in my personal history, instead of pain and suffering pushing me away from God, pain and suffering has often pushed me towards God. Some of my most powerful and dynamic experiences with God have come in my most intense moments of agony and despair. The problem of beauty and goodness serves as a rebuttal to the problem of evil. It's hard to imagine how the immense beauty and goodness within the universe could be the product of of blind chance and pure happenstance. A mindless and thoughtless process that has no aesthetic sense and no appreciation for beauty and goodness. I'm not sure that the greatest artist in the history of the world could design a universe more beautiful than ours, or could paint a portrait of a world that is more aesthetically pleasing than our own. But it's one thing for a transcendental being to be able to do this. It's another thing for matter, or atoms, or cells themselves to do this. For me, theism makes more sense of the awe-inspiring and breathtaking beauty of our universe and our Earth than atheism does. There's one other thing that I want to mention about aesthetics and goodness. When you're comparing worldviews like theism and atheism, you are comparing narratives. Obviously, coherence is a good standard to use when comparing and contrasting narratives. But so is beauty. To me, theism is a more beautiful narrative than atheism. And I don't even think it's close. In conclusion, theism, in my subjective opinion, makes more sense of reality as we know it and experience it than atheism does. In a theistic worldview, rationality naturally, logically, and coherently flows from rationality. Freedom naturally, logically, and coherently flows from freedom. Morality flows from morality. Truth flows from truth. Beauty flows from beauty. Spirit flows from spirit. Transcendental experience flows from transcendent experience. And human beings flow from the image of the living God. What's more miraculous? That these novel results of the creative processes and natural developments of the universe came from the non-rational and the indeterminate or determinate, and the amoral, and the subjective and the relative, and the non-aesthetic, and the impersonal? Or that these things came from God, mind from mind, will from will, morality from moral being, truth from truth itself, beauty from the divine artist? Which worldview requires more faith from its adherents? A theistic worldview or an atheistic worldview? It seems as though many who reject God have blind faith in things like absolute truth, objective morality, human rationality, and meaning and purpose in the world. But that's actually a good thing, because truth, morality, rationality, and meaning are good things. And atheists are good things too. Because an atheist, the person who doesn't believe in God, is the sacred creation of a good and beautiful God. My philosophy professor from graduate school, Michael Peterson, who was a joint editor on some of the philosophy of religion material from Oxford University Press, and who specializes in the problem of evil and the relationship between religion and science, sincerely believes that theism triumphs over atheism in all of these major categories of evaluation and engagement. except with maybe one exception, the problem of evil, which he believes is a wash. What do you believe? This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinkersensitive.